God's people, this is again Mordecai Joseph. We are today in lesson 186. And last time we were in Genesis with Jacob in chapter 32 and his encounter with God, the one that is presented in some places as the angel of the Lord or the man that he struggled with. In either case, as God presented himself in many places by different names, nevertheless, still the same person. And unfortunately, a lot of people that do not have the perception, the understanding, you know, are not being led by the Holy Spirit to understand what they read. In other words, they can read and they can know, but they don't know the meaning of it. They don't comprehend this. And once upon a time, obviously, the children of Israel understood this, understood the divine being that was here with Jacob, who was not the supreme El Elyon. They knew that he was sent from him, but gradually darkness fell upon Israel and then Judah, and they lost this information, and to this very day they did not regain it, even though until the Second Temple era they knew that the one that was sent from God was also a divine being. And some Jews, and even rabbis, retain this knowledge to this day, but you know, it's not popular to let everybody know about it. And therefore, generally speaking, you see most in darkness. And so when Jacob is struggling here with the angel of the Lord, with a man, with God, and he knows who that person is, and he's speaking with him, and he's talking with him throughout this struggle. It's not just a silent one, you know, all night. You can imagine an awful lot of things were going on, and God did not choose to record that. But that's, in essence, the journey that every single one of us is taking with God. The struggle that we have to go through in order to become an Israel. It is a title that we earn by deed. You see, God doesn't just graft someone into this community of Israel, and then that's it. You know, they are now Israelites. No, we have to do it by struggling with God on a daily basis to overcome self, to overcome the world, to resist the devil. And so we do it constantly with a perpetual state of mind of prayer, of communication with God, of pleading with God, of weeping, you know, as we read in Hosea, that when Jacob was wrestling with God, he actually wept. So an awful lot of things, you know, were going on during that night. And now and there, you know, the scripture reveals to us more details. And so Jacob is asking him for his name. And there are many instances throughout the Bible where we see this very request. And obviously, those with ears to hear and eyes to see, they understand that this is not just talking about a simple question, what is your name? You know, just like we ask somebody we don't know, what's your name? This is not the issue here. It's something much deeper than that. And so we'll have a little background here about this matter. For example, when we go to Exodus chapter 3, let's go to this place now. And in this instance, we see Moses standing before the burning bush, and he's speaking to God, and God is introducing himself to him. And obviously, Moses did not talk to God before that. It's a new experience for him in this sense. And then, obviously, he's telling God, well, I'm, you know, in essence, Moses now is encountering God. You know, Israel has not, and his commission is to go to Israel. So he has now a question before God. How are they going to know who this God is? By now, the children of Israel were in Egypt for quite a while, and they've been worshipping idols, unfortunately, along with their knowledge of the God of Abraham and Isaac. And in Egypt, they worshipped every conceivable god that represented any creature or the stars of heaven. So now he comes to them and tells them about this God of Abraham and Isaac. Obviously, they are going to have questions. And so we read in verse 13 of chapter 3, and Moses said unto God, that is to Elohim, behold, when I come to the children of Israel, and shall say unto them, the Elohim of your fathers has sent me unto you. And they shall say to me, what is his name? You see? In other words, you're talking about a long period of time that Israel lost an awful lot of knowledge and understanding of their God. And there are many gods. Even in Babylon, when the family of Abraham did know the God of heavens, at the same time they also worshipped other gods. And in those days, you know, you have to understand the mentality of the people of that time. As time developed, they thought, okay, we know about the God of gods. He's the supreme El Elyon. Everybody knew that. That was not something foreign to their minds. And you see in the encounter of Abraham and Isaac with the peoples of the land, be it the Philistines or in Egypt, they knew about this God. He came and spoke to them at night. You know, they didn't think that that was something strange. They knew who that person was. But also, they worshipped other gods because they thought, well, there are many also. You know, it developed to be that way. After all, the knowledge was there from the beginning. There are two of them, and so some people started thinking, well, there may be three or four, seven, ten, and all that. So I was a part of the reality. And so when he comes and tells them the God of your father, well, they knew that their fathers, you know, worshipped other gods, of course, not Abraham and Isaac, but generally speaking, it was there in their family, and we shall see later even Jacob in his own family had still, you know, those gods that were stolen by Rachel and were preserved by the rest of his children who continued to worship them. Here it is, children of Jacob. And he finally had to take it away from them and bury them. And so obviously that was confusing for them. So, you know, he said, they will ask, who is that person? In other words, how can we know? What does he have to you know, what can he do to prove that he is that very one that, you know, the fathers? And it's not just a name that is involved here. There is much more than that, and we're going to see as we continue. And so he said, you know, that they're going to ask me, what is his name? And so Elohim replies, this is the angel of the Lord that appeared in the bush. He's also Elohim, he's also Jehovah. And so he tells them, that is, he tells Moses to tell Israel in verse 14, and God said unto Moses, in English you read, I am that I am. And he said, you shall say unto the children of Israel, I am has sent me unto you. And actually he did not use this terminology here, I am. He used the words Ehye Asher Ehye. Now, I am, in Hebrew you say Ani, that means I am, or Anochi, that's the biblical terminology of I am, but he did not use any of this. He said instead Ehye. You see, I am, it's in essence, has to do more with the present. I'm here or I'm not here. But he used the Ehye, which is the future tense, of to be. Ehye asher ehye. So in essence he told him, not I am, but I will be. That I will be. I am that I am. Now what does that mean, I will be that I will be? In essence, whatever God is going to do, if he is going to be the deliverer, then he says, I will be the deliverer. The redeemer, he will be the redeemer, the one that punishes the gods of Egypt. You see? In other words, by whatever he's going to do, this is what he is. And as he told them, as time went by, for example, you know, in the case of sickness, he says, I am the Lord, I am the Eternal, that heals you. You see? Yehovah Rof Echa. In other words, the Eternal that heals you. Some people think that, you know, they even not knowing exactly how to say it, some say Yahweh Rofika and things like that. That's not his name, in the sense of a name. This is what he does. And so he's telling him, let them know that whatever I'm going to do, this is what I am. I'm not limited. In other words, I'm not the God of fire, and that's all I can do, or the God of waters, or the God of the Nile, or the God of this, you know, or the stars, or the moon, or the sun, or animals, or fertility, whatever it may be. You see? I am the kind of a God that can do everything, and your gods can't. To begin with, they're not true. And so he did not introduce himself as I am. You know, that's in essence the false translation that totally loses the meaning of what he was really saying. Yeah, that's one reason what God tells us, that, you know, that he's spirit and they who worship him must worship him in truth, not in half truth, not in, you know, mixed up truth, not in a perverted truth, but in truth and in spirit. You see, the intent of what he was saying is important. And some people, unfortunately, don't understand that. And so he did not say, I am. He said, Ehyeh, I will be. Whatever I'm going to do, this is what I am. And so let's read a little bit here for the commentary and the understanding that was in the Hebrew community about this matter. And the commentary on verse 14, where he says, I will be that I will be, we read this. Ehyeh asher ehyeh, this is what he said in Hebrew, I will be that I will be, the self-existent and eternal God, a declaration of the unity and spirituality of the divine nature, the exact opposite of all the forms of idolatry, human, animal, and celestial, that prevailed everywhere else. In other words, you know, they all have their limitations, you see, and they can all manifest themselves only in a certain way, but God says, I'm not limited to any of these things. See, so just giving a name, one name, you see, is not going to convey what he is. And that's, in essence, what he's trying to tell them. So we continue here. However, not merely, in other words, I am that I am, or he that I hear, is not merely a philosophical phrase. The emphasis is on the active manifestation of the divine existence. And he's going to manifest himself, you know, this is not quoting, but my explanation here, commentary, he's going to manifest himself as a deliverer, as a healer, you see, as a lawgiver, as one who is going to feed them bread when they need it and give them water, you see, as a man of war, as he did, you know, as they crossed the Red Sea and he destroyed the armies of Egypt, you see, as the one that gives them light at night and the cloud by day, you see, and brings down the manna and so forth and so forth. In other words, when people want to limit God by only a name, you see, like all the idols, you know, they have a name, which basically is a limited thing that limits them. He says, I'm not limited by anything. Whatever I'm going to do, whatever I've done, or whatever I'm doing, whatever I've done, this is what I am. So in other words, when he's talking about his name, it is his nature, you see, that is conveying by that. And so, all, you know, that's the reason why God has many names. He's a man of war. He's the Lord of hosts. He's the rock. He's the redeemer. He's the buckler. You know, as David would call him, in, you know, by many names. And this is what the ancients didn't have. They had gods that had limited office. They could do only certain things, you see. And so when they wanted a deliverance in the sense of fertility, you know, to get, for a woman to get pregnant, they went to a certain god. When they wanted something in terms of harvest, they went to another god, you see. When they had a problem with the war, they went to another god. But God says, no, that's not the God that I am, you know, like all those gods that you have. I am whatever I do. I'm not limited by anything. So whatever I'm going to do for you, this is what I am. That's why he said, Ehyeh Asher Ehyeh, I will be whatever I will be, whatever I'm going to do for you. You see? And so the word I am does not convey at all, obviously, what he's trying to let his people know, and to this very day. We know God, depending on our own experiences, you see, in many ways. There are people who know God because they've been healed. See, others didn't go through horrible sickness, but those who did go through a horrible sickness and struggled with God and wrestled with God, they know him in a certain way that others don't, unless they went through that experience. The people that went through war or famine, the people who went through persecution and have struggled with God and wrestled with God, they know him in a certain way that others would not, unless they went through it. And that's what it means, Ehyeh Asher Ehyeh, I will be whatever I will be. You know, to any given person or to all of you put together, under different circumstances. And that's in essence what Jacob, when he's asking, you know, tell me your name. He's not just, you know, what's your name? You know, John Smith or whatever? You know, this is not what he's talking about. It's far deeper than that. You know, in other words, show me your nature, show me your divine nature, show me your power, your glory, your majesty. And, you know, a lot of people that had greater understanding, you know, as they studied these matters and put all the things together, even physically speaking, you know, humanly speaking, they had a much greater understanding of that. And others just read it, you know, and just goes over their head, and they read it superficially. They obviously don't derive much of this understanding as they should, because the mind of God is something we have to study very deeply day and night, and still, even there, nobody can search the unsearchable depth, as Paul would say, of God, of the height, of the breadth, of the length, you see, of the width. And that's in essence what God is saying. You cannot limit me. So I will be whatever I will be. Whatever I'm going to do, that's how you're going to know me. Through whatever experience you're going to go through, and when my presence is going to be in it, and my divine manifestation. And so let's continue here the quote. The emphasis is on the active manifestation of the divine existence. And the explanation of the Midrash, that is the commentary, Yehyeh Asher Yehyeh. In other words, I am going to be called by my deeds. Now, to the Israelites in bondage, still quoting, the meaning would be, although he has not yet displayed his power towards you, he will do so. He is eternal and will certainly redeem you. Now, what they were concerned about the most is redemption. Once they've been redeemed from Egypt, what they were concerned the most about was, as they go along in the wilderness, is water, and then food, and then shelter from the sun, and so forth. And then they had sicknesses and problems, they needed healing. You see, and they had problems and they needed information and wisdom and solutions and all that. So he's going to reveal himself to them on a daily basis, you see, based on the needs of the moment. You see, we don't need deliverance when we're not being persecuted, but we may need healing. Or we may not be, you know, in need of healing because, you know, we're doing well, but we may be hungry, you see. And that's how God is manifesting himself to us. And that's why he used this name. I will be that I will be. So it's not really a name, because a name cannot describe God. But when he puts it in this way, that is all-encompassing. Just like his name, you know, the Jehovah, means was, is, and will be. You know, is eternal. And now, most moderns follow Rashi, who was the greatest commentator of Hebrew scriptures. And so they render, I will be that I will be. In other words, they do not say, I am, but I will be that I will be, because that's what he said. No words can sum up all that he is, you know, all that he will be to his people. But his everlasting faithfulness and unchanging mercy will more, you see, and more manifest themselves in the guidance of Israel. The answer to which Moses receives in these words is thus equivalent to, I shall save in the way that I shall save. And even that is limited. It is to assure the Israelites of the fact of deliverance, but does not disclose the manner. And oftentimes, when we ask for deliverance, you know, we like to also know how he's going to do it, and God generally doesn't let us know. And it oftentimes comes in ways we never expect. And so that falls within that meaning. I will be that I will be. Whatever I'm going to do, this is what I am. In the manner I'm going to do it, this is what I am. You see? And so when he says to him, this is my name, he's talking about all these aspects of it. So the glory of God, the manifestation of God, the power of God, you know, the redemption of God, the healing powers of God, and all those things cannot be encompassed, obviously, by one name. That's the reason why God has many names, because each one describes different aspects of him. While on the other hand, the pagans took every aspect of God, you see, and made it a god. See, God is a creator, so they have a God that creates. You know, God is a redeemer, so they have a God that redeems. God is a healer, so they have a God that heals. God is the one that, you know, opens the womb and shuts the womb, so they have a God of fertility, and so forth and so forth. You see, he's the one that brings down the rain and causes, you know, the ground to bear forth, you know, fruit, and so they have a God for that. And that's what idolatry is all about. Taking every manifestation of God and making God out of it. And that's unfortunately, it's a part of the nature of man. And that's why man is incurably idol worshiper. And so, we seek always idols, you know, without even realizing it. And so we're looking to man, you know, for deliverance, and we're looking to this and that and the other thing, and each one of those things become a god unto us. And God says, you know, you cannot compare me to anything, so I will be that I will be. Whatever I'm going to do, this is how you're going to know me, and this is going to be my name. And that's in essence when Jacob is asking God that he's struggling with, you know, tell me your name. He's not just asking about, you know, what's your name in the sense of, you know, that we know when we don't know someone's name, we ask him, what's your name? This is not the issue here. And so this is what he's telling them. He told them, I am that I am. I am has sent me. And so he said, verse 14 again, you shall say unto the children of Israel, I am has sent me unto you. And it's not I am, you see, I'm reading it in the English, but it's Ehye. You see, I will be. I will be has sent me unto you. And God said moreover unto Moses, thus shall you say unto the children of Israel, the Eternal, you see, the God of your fathers, the Elohim of your fathers, that is the deity, so the Eternal means was, is, and will be, and the Elohim of Abraham, and the Elohim of Isaac, and the Elohim of Jacob has sent me unto you, this is my name forever. This is my memorial unto all generations. You see? In other words, you're going to experience me throughout the entirety of your life as you walk with me, you see, based on what your needs are. So don't ever limit me into anything. You know, they've got this society today and has been in the past of people who are limiting God. And they are into that mode of the name, you know, the sacred name. And you got to pronounce a certain name in a certain way. Instead of understanding, no, God is whatever he's going to do to anywhere. You know, if there are some people in China that come to the knowledge of God and all they know is Chinese, you see, and they need deliverance from a persecutor, from government, from sickness, from disease, from a flooding, you know, river, and whatever it may be, and they cry to God and he delivers them, that's how they know him. And so they may call upon him as the God who delivered them from the flooding. See, so his name becomes the God who delivers from a flood. There is no sacred name. You know, where you limit him to one single name, and some people think if that's the only name you use, then you're okay, and if you don't, you know, you're out of this society. You know, you don't know anything. That, you know, that in essence tells you also that people are idol worshippers. Even names of God become idols to them, which is very unfortunate. You cannot limit God, or his nature, or his divine manifestation. You see? And so he reveals himself by many names. And that's why you read, you know, when Jacob was fleeing from Laban, you know, when he finally encountered him, and they were swearing, Laban by his gods, you see, the idols of his fathers, and also he knew about the God of heaven that, you know, came to him and appeared to him, and so he's swearing by his name also, you see, the God of Abraham, his uncle. But we read about Isaac, about Jacob, he's swearing by the fear of Isaac. And the fear means a name of God. The God that Isaac feared, that means reverence, you know, stood in awe, worshipped, honored, adored, and all that. So, even a word like, just like fear, you know, fear you would not think is the name of God, but it is a fear of God. Man is a name of God. He has many names, you see. And so when Jacob is asking, what is your name? He's talking about the nature, the manifestation, you know, many aspects of God and glory. And also, you know, he's very glory in the sense of the light, you know, that emanates from him, the majesty, his appearance as a divine being, in contrast to when he empties himself and he appears just as a mortal man. He says that many times. And so oftentimes when they ask him about his name, you know, the meaning, you know, show us, you know, that aspect of you that is majesty and glory, you know, that divinity, that brilliance, that light, you see. And so we have to understand it from that point of view, because that's what it means. And let's have another example here of, in essence, a taste of the kingdom. You see, a taste of His glory, that is. And we read in, as we've covered that before, and a lot of people that read it, because of the misunderstanding and lack, superficial understanding of the Word of God, they don't understand at all what they are reading. You see, in other words, you have to understand the meaning of what you're reading. And a lot of people are confused because of that, and they have a lot of doctrines that they invent in their own minds because they have no understanding, no knowledge, as they should. And so when God here speaks to Moses, and we went through it thoroughly, but now we'll read it again in the context of this understanding in chapter 6 in Exodus, when he appears to Moses another time among many. In chapter 6 we read in verse 2, and God spoke unto Moses and said unto him, I am the Eternal. In other words, I am Jehovah, you see, the Eternal. And I appeared unto Abraham and unto Isaac and unto Jacob as Elohim. And actually it's El Shaddai. You see, so God here is El and not Elohim, but El, Almighty, means Shaddai. And as I explained earlier, Almighty is not what it means. You see, they just put Almighty because basically the ones that translated into the Bible into English, coming from a Puritan background, and they did not, they could not bring themselves to translate exactly what it really means, based on their, false modesty. It's not a biblical one. And instead of translating, Shaddai for what it means, the God of my breasts, that's what it means. Shad is a breast, Shaddai, my breasts. And what is it that comes out of the breast? You see, if it is a woman, she nourishes the baby, milk comes out of it, you see. So that's his nourishment, that's his sustenance, you see. So that's a euphemism for breast, sustenance and nourishment. And also the earth is described as having breasts. And what is the breast of the earth? Well, whatever it produces out of the ground and nourishes men, you see, that's also Shaddai. So instead of translating exactly what it means and then explaining it, they just said, well, Almighty. Well, Almighty doesn't describe at all what this word is. You see, that hides the issue, clouds it. So when he says, I was known to them as, in essence, a deity that sustains them, that nourishes them, and that's what he did for them. You see? And so he says, but by my name, Jehovah, I made me not known to them. What does that mean? And nobody knew my name, Jehovah? Well, we made it very plain. The Bible makes it very plain. Every single one of them call upon the name Jehovah. Even the pagan kings call upon the name of Jehovah. Laban knew Jehovah. Hagar. Everybody. From the beginning until the end. So that's not what he's talking about. You see, and people with superficial knowledge, obviously don't get it. What he was saying, that I made promises to them, in a sense. I told them I will have, I will give them children as the stars of heaven. I told them that they are going to end up in the land of the enemy, and they're going to be slaves, and I'm going to deliver them by mighty signs and wonders, and going to bring them to the land of glory. So all those things, he said, they did not experience. They just heard, and they believed. They knew that it's going to pass because they've known me, they've experienced me, but not as a God who delivers, you see, not as a God that gives them an awful lot of children and all the things that he was going to do. In other words, Israel has experienced God, was about to experience God in ways that the fathers did not, you see. And that's in essence what he's talking about here. So the name of God encompasses all that he is, all that he does. And all that he does, you see, basically describes his attributes. If you are in need of mercy and he shows you mercy, well, he's the God of mercy. You see? And so forth. So this is what he's talking here about, the fact that the fathers did not know him in many aspects that now Israel is going to know him. He did not say that he just didn't know my name. So in essence, again, you know, when Jacob is asking, what is your name? He's not asking, you know, the name per se. He wants God to manifest himself in other, you know, attributes and traits and glory, and, you know, appear to him even in his glory. Now, let's see something even clearer than that. Two examples, one in the Hebrew Scriptures, and then later on one in the New Testament. In the book of Exodus again, in chapter 23, let's continue here. Moses saw God in the burning bush. He saw the glory there, you know, that was light and brilliance, that was sort of burning, looked like a fire. But he never saw God as Abraham did in the flesh, or Jacob did, you know, face to face. You see? Because God appeared to him, you know, in all these different manifestations, and he wanted to see more than that. You see? And oftentimes, God appeared to him in the tabernacle, or, you know, in many other ways, and he saw him, but it was not always a full manifestation. And so we read in chapter 23, he wanted to see him in a greater way, in ways that he hasn't seen so far. Because all that describes God, what he is. I will be what I will be. And so he's requesting from God, show me your glory. And let's go to chapter 23, where we read that. And chapter 23 and verse 11. Actually, chapter 33, not 23. In chapter 33 and verse 11. We read here, and the Lord spoke unto Moses, that is the Eternal, face to face, as a man speaks unto his friend. And so he appeared to him many times. He obviously emptied himself of his divinity, which means that Moses did not see God in his full glory, because otherwise, obviously, he would have died. And so he wanted to experience God in other ways. And so here we read that he saw him face to face, as a man speaks unto his friend. And then, you know, he would go back to the camp, and his servant Joshua, the son of Nun, a young man, departed not out of the tent. Verse 12, and Moses said unto the Lord, see, you say unto me, bring up these people, and you have not let me know whom will you send with me. Yet you have said, I know you by name. What does it mean, I know you by name? You know, I know that your name is Moses. No, I know your nature. In other words, God is telling Moses, look, I know you through and through. So now Moses says, you know, now you know me by nature, you know my nature, you know what I am, I don't know what you are, to the degree that you know me. I'm more of you. And that's what he's saying here. He said, you know, you said that you know me by name, and that you also found grace in my sight. Now therefore I pray you, if I found grace in your sight, show me your ways. You see? In other words, show me not just your ways in the sense, you know, which way to go, but show me the way you function, you know, the way you're going to live, you know, the miraculous ways in which you are going to do it, you know. Let me know more about your mind, the way it works. What are you planning? You see, let me experience you in ways that I have not so far. So it says, show me your ways that I may know you, to the end that I may find grace in your sight. And consider that this nation is your people. And so when Jacob was asking also the angels, tell me your name, he's talking more about that also. More than just, you know, what's your name? And so it continues here, Moses in verse 14. Well, actually, God is replying to him. And he said, my presence shall go with you, and I will give you rest. You see, in other words, God says, my presence, my glory, my majesty, you know, that cloud there in which there was light by night, you see, the manifestation of God, as became known as the Shekhinah. Shekhinah means the indwelling, from the word lishkon, to dwell. And that's what presence means. He says, you know, this will go with you, and I will give you rest. So he became known as the God of rest, you know, he gives us rest.
That's a part of his nature and character. That's a part of his name. Verse 15, in other words, his name is not really a name, but a description of what he is. And he said unto him, that is Moses, if your presence go not with me, carry us not up from here. And for wherein now shall it be known that I have found grace in your sight, I and your people? Is it not in that you go with us, so that we are disguised, that is distinguished, I and your people, from all the people that are upon the face of the earth? And the Lord said unto Moses, I will do this thing also that you have spoken. So God knows Moses by name. That means he knows him. He knows him just like it says, you know, in Genesis in the beginning, and Adam knew his wife Eve. What does it mean? He knew her, you know. He knew that she's Eve. No. Speaking about an intimate thing, an intimate matter, an experience that goes beyond than just, you know, well, I know her, well, I know him. He has an intimate relationship that obviously there involved a sexual relationship and emotions and feelings and everything that goes into it, you know, that produced a child. And so the knowledge that here that Moses is requesting, and the knowledge of Jacob requesting, tell me your name, that's talking about an intimate relationship with God. You see? And the knowledge of his divinity and glory. And so the Lord said unto Moses, I will do this thing also that you have spoken, for you have found grace in my sight, and I know you by name. Again, you know, I know you, I know your mind, your nature, your character, you know what you are made of. I'm going to let you know me also in ways that you have not known so far. I'm going to let you experience me. And that's what we are talking about here. And the know of God is whatever you experience God, in whatever situation and circumstance we are. And so he said, Moses is saying that, show me, I pray you, your glory. See, that's how I'm going to know you in ways I did not know before that. And he said, I will make all my goodness pass before you, my majesty and glory, brilliance, light and all that. And I will proclaim the name of the Eternal before you, and I will be gracious to whom I will be gracious, and I will show mercy on whom I will show mercy. And all the things explain what God is. These are all descriptions. So the name of God is just like the name. It's not the name like, you know, the human beings have, you know. My name is Mordecai, your name is John Smith, or whatever it may be. You see? Now, it doesn't describe me. That doesn't mean anything in terms of my nature and character and personality, you see. You have to go far beyond that. So this is the name that we are talking about here. The person, not just a title that you give to a person, you know, or the name, that it's neither here nor there. Without the experience of the person and the nature and the character, the personality and the being, you know, and the emotions of the person, his capacities and abilities and all that. So this is what a name, you know, biblically speaking, really means. And that's the reason why God gives us names. It's not just a name. It's what it means. It's what we are. And God is going to give us names in the future based on what we became through a life of struggling and wrestling with him. And at the end time, what we became at that point, this is what our name is going to be. You see? And this is what he's saying here. I will be gracious to whom I will be gracious, and will show mercy on whom I will show mercy. And he said, you cannot see my face. You know, he wanted to see his face and his brilliance and glory and majesty. For men shall not see my face, that is me, and live. For simple reasons, you know, your flesh and blood, if I'm going to show my brilliance, which is much more brighter than the sun, obviously you're going to evaporate. So it's not going to work. And, you know, some people get confused. Well, you know, if you cannot see my face and live, well, how come it says earlier that he saw his face, that he saw God face to face? Well, obviously at that point he emptied his himself of that glory that, you know, radiated from his face, and therefore he was able to see his face and really know exactly how he looked like. At this point he could not. In other words, if he shows him in his brilliance and glory, obviously he would not be able to do it. And so that's what God is telling him. You cannot see my face, for a man that is going to see my face is not going to live. Verse 21, and the Lord said, behold, there is a place by me, and you shall stand upon the rock, and it shall come to pass, while my glory, majesty, you know, the brilliance that comes from my face, you know, in other words, as I proceed toward you, I would not allow you to see my face, otherwise you will die. I'm going to. So he said, I will put you in the cleft of the rock and will cover you with my hand. You know, as he reaches closer to Moses, you see, obviously he's going to approach Moses with his face turned the other way, so he would not see him, otherwise he would die. And he said, I will put my hand until I pass by, and I will take away my hand, and you shall see my back, but my face shall not be seen. And so when Moses wants to see he wants to see God, that's what he's saying, you know. I want to know your name. He's not talking about a name, and Jacob is not talking about a name when he's asking God, you know, what is your name? He says, show me your glory, you know. I mean, it's the most exciting thing for men to see his creator in his full glory and majesty. And that's in essence what we read here in the wrestling match that Jacob had with God. You know, now that he overcame, you know, now that God is approving of him, he said, well, would you please show me, not, you know, as I see you now, wrestling with me as a man, but show me the brilliance and the majesty of your glory. And obviously that includes also your divine nature, so that I can be absorbed by it and be a part of it and have that intimate relationship with you. Now, when we go to Matthew at this point, this very God that is speaking to Moses and the glory that he showed him, he's also going to do the same for his servants, for his disciples. But you know, in a different way, obviously. This time it's going to be in a vision. With Moses, it was not a vision. He was fully awake. He literally saw God. That is the backside of God. He could not see his face, obviously. But the disciples, likewise, they are fully aware of all these things. They know what it means, show me, you know, tell me your name. You know, they have that desire to see Jesus Christ in his full glory. And Christ wanted to show them, you know, to form a more intimate relationship with them by showing him his glory. And so, at a certain point, and after Jesus Christ mentioned that several times, that he's going to show them a measure of his glorious kingdom, of his power, of his majesty, you see, to have a taste of the kingdom, in other words, is to have a taste of the divine, of the glory of the divine. And so in Matthew 16, this is what we read. Let's go to Matthew 16 and verse 28, where Christ is telling his disciples, assuredly I say to you, there are some standing here who shall not taste death till they see the Son of Man coming in his kingdom. You see? You're going to see me as I am, as a divine being, because they've known him as flesh and blood. And in essence, the way Moses and the way Abraham, the way Jacob, and wrestled with him, they've known him as a man. That's how he appeared to them. And so, obviously, when they entered into a very intimate, close relationship, like Jacob, you know, you're wrestling with a man all night, and, you know, you're developing a bond there, and got to the point where, you know, you have such an intimacy that you want to see more. And that's what he's saying, you know, show me your name. And that's what Moses is saying here, and he showed him. To Jacob, he did not. You see? He did not show them their glory, his glory and majesty. He did not show it to Abraham, but to Moses he did. And so again, in chapter 6 of Exodus, as we read, this is in essence also what he was saying. I was known to them as Almighty, that is, you know, El Shaddai, the God of nourishment and sustenance, and I appeared to them, yes, you know, they saw me face to face, but they have not, you know, seen me in my glory and majesty, as I'm now revealing myself to you. And that's in essence what he's saying here. And here, this very being, divine being, now in the flesh, he's telling his disciples, I am going to show you also. Obviously, they requested that of him several times, and he mentioned certain things, and so he's now wanting to give them that glimpse so they can have a much even a more intimate relationship with him and be encouraged for the rest of their lives. After all, they had a very hard commission ahead of them. That's what he's saying then. I'm going to give you a little taste of the kingdom. That means seeing me. That's what it means, not that you're going to be there. And so then we read the account in Matthew 17. Now after 6 days, after he said that, Jesus took Peter, James, and John, his brother, and led them up on a high mountain by themselves. And he was transfigured, just like he did with Moses. You see, he appears to him face to face, and he can see him and talk to him, but now he's transfigured. So this transfiguration that you read about here in Matthew already happened, and Moses was apparently the only one that was able to see it, you see, face to face. And in contrast to the fathers, Abraham and Isaac, who were not, because they saw God, but not in his divine manifestation. The apostles saw God in his fleshly attire, so to speak, but not in his divine manifestation. Jacob wanted to see him, and he could not. Moses is the only being that ever saw God. Now, the prophets, and probably Abraham and others, they've seen God in his divine manifestation, but not in reality, but in a vision. And here it is what he's going to give the disciples. Something that most people obviously didn't have, but still not as close as he showed himself to Moses. And that's why it said about Moses when he died, he was the only man that had seen God face to face, beside just his manifestation to him without his divine glory. But in his divine glory, he was the only man to whom God showed himself. And so we read here in verse 2, and he was transfigured before them, and his face shone like the sun, and his clothes became as white as light. And behold, Moses and Elijah, you know, the one that he showed himself to, appeared to them talking with him. And of course, they were very, very, you know, overwhelmed by that. But that's in essence, you know, what Moses was asking for, and Moses was able to see it in a way that nobody ever did. Well, anyway, this is again Mordecai Joseph saying greetings to all of God's people. Until next time.